Back, it is Monday morning, and yes, it's almost the end of October. I got Warris here with me this morning because the Shady Podcast is just not enough time for him. And we've got to talk about American politics. I know you do occasionally dip into it.
I do, on occasion.
And I love it, and I just wanted us to talk. And a lot of people are very unhappy about how much American politics we're talking about. So I'm going to break the mold. We did talk UFC. We did talk about an island with people who fight to the death.
Yeah.
We talked about old Van Damme movies. So it's all happened.
They're not cuck. Listen.
We spoke about like rich people's houses in Monaco, but here's a picture of what we think. And obviously it's very cruel because she's still a baby or she's still a child, young girl. But this is what we think. Blue Ivy. What is her name? Blue Ivy.
Oh, Beyonce's
daughter. Mm. This is what she's probably going to look like when she's older.
Oh, what is wrong with you? Oh, I would like to distance myself. That is fucked.
Okay, look, if she takes after dad, right?
Listen, you know, to be honest, and this is the thing, you know, I feel like when you have kids,
yeah,
you pray that they're cute. Because it's very awkward when you are presented with someone's child and the child is ugly, you know, just to call a spade.
That happened to me the other day.
True. And now it's like, oh, this is my son. You know, fortunately, my children are good looking. Thank you, Jesus.
Oh, you're a beautiful kid.
But when you're presented with somebody's child and then you have to say they're cute, no one is going to say, oh, your child is mediocre looking.
Have you seen those videos?
When does it?
Of the, they take a picture of this really ugly, like, very, very ugly baby. It's like it's blue in color. It's obviously been oxygen deprived or whatever. And they show this very ugly picture to like the grandma of the house or whatever.
Mm.
And then they're like, it's a video call. You have to.
Oh, it's a prank. Yes, I've seen it. And they're
these,
like,
and these girls like show their gran or their uncle or whoever.
Or their mom.
Or their mom or their dad. And then these people are like, oh, ho.
Yeah, the instant
like, that's
reaction
an ugly
is
baby, and they don't like it at all. You can tell they're struggling now to find something to say because they think it's a video call with the mom.
And it's awkward horrible. Because it's like you being polite. And I think in the beginning, especially because this is just as I saved myself from being canceled.
Yeah.
Blue Ivy was not visually appealing when she was a
baby. I don't know.
But now that she's sort of like coming to her tea, what she's really blossomed like the ugly duckling.
I'm sure she's not ugly. Her mother's not ugly. But her dad, you know, if she gets a lot of those genes,
yeah, her daddy's ugly blue. But she got the best. She got the best attribute. Like Beyonce really saved that child. I must be honest. She's really like she's very pretty now. And I'm not just saying that because I don't want to be nasty.
Well, you know,
but she's getting better as she gets older. When she was a baby, she wasn't the one.
The other thing is that you can't always, you could have a beautiful mom and a really good looking dad and still have an ugly child.
You can.
You know?
Yeah.
You can have very ugly parents and they produce a beautiful child. It happens. I've met at least a handful of girls in my life and you think she probably has a really hot mom and like a dad is really good looking and you see them and they're like short and fat and like weird
like
looking.
How did you produce
that? How did you make this?
Yeah.
There's
a video that's trending of this family. They're like an Arizona family.
Yeah.
Four daughters, mom, dad. And the four daughters, the one daughter is now saying, outfit check, you know, and she's doing the video. And she shows herself. Then she shows her sister. And they are getting hotter and hotter. And people are commenting and saying, damn, whose jeans are these type of thing? And then they show the dad and the dad is a hunk. And they show the mom and the mom is a gilf.
Like, oh, wow.
And they say like, you know, that you couldn't have had a more perfect family in terms of the genes because the video was trending because they all flipping hot. Four girls, mom, and then this buddy.
Wow.
I'll show you the video. It is like.
Tell you what, I wouldn't want to be that dad, hey?
Neither would I.
Yes, I think there's
I went and I followed all four of the daughters individually and I went to look through their profiles and I was like, okay, it's not a scam. They are all hot.
And you can check all their pictures because you sometimes tell if it's a video because they can't filter it.
Yeah.
Right? But I think it's worse if you're a dad and you have beautiful daughters. It's a lot harder. If you have an ugly, like it's almost a blessing.
I think
it is. You almost want your daughter to be really like a troll.
Hey, boo. You want your daughter to be hot, I think. You don't want a daughter that's struggling.
But that's struggling.
You want a daughter that's struggling, brother. It's not going to work. I'm going to find this video.
She's got a moustache and she's got like a bad teeth.
Like, it's not the one. You don't want a son that's struggling either, because those are hard conversations to have. To say, you know what, son?
You're never going to get laid.
You're never going to get laid, but it's okay. Because you can just be like Elon Musk and fly rockets and maybe. James, I sent you that video. Please show it to
Garrett. Please, that'll be good.
It's the one.
So Ruth says, I'm short and fat and have a drop-dead gorgeous son, lol. Okay, you see.
You see, Ruth, we can't take that as credible information because every parent says their child is cute. But please send us a picture.
I must tell you, like, this is.
I promise I won't be nasty.
This has become a thing, too, of Leanne Adams says here, Di never helped William. He looks like a broken Brussels sprout. So someone put up a picture, and I, you know, you can have everything in life. Like, you could be the future king of England.
Mm.
But I felt bad for the guy because they showed a picture of Prince William when he was in high school or whatever. He's just heartthrob, and every girl in Britain wanted to be his wife.
Mm, he had these rosy cheeks.
Yeah, rosy cheeks, and he had hair. And
yeah, he wasn't bald yet.
And now, and then they show him now, and he's like a broken down house. He's like he's
dilapidated.
He looks, I mean, look, he's had a tough time. His brother doesn't fucking talk to him, you know. The wife's been very sick. He's been out there working triple shift because Kate's down. Father's got
Harry's
cancer.
Down. Harry and Harry's Meghan are out.
Gapped it.
Yes. He's been dealing with the stress of Meghan Markle.
And the stress has lost all his hair. And like, he looks tired, hey?
I think, you know, I wouldn't.
So Prince William and I, they put this up and they're like, it's not always a fairy tale.
Prince Charles is winning. I wouldn't have complained if William went for hair transplant. He really started balding early.
He should.
You know? He kind of like, he gives the impression that he had one bay his whole life, which is a waste of being a prince. I mean, at least Harry frolicked.
What a waste of being a prince.
He settled on a shit one, but.
What a waste of being a prince.
What a waste of being a prince. And then you settle with a war bag. What the fuck, Harry?
Well,
come on.
These days, it's not a big thing to go and get hair transplants. One of my mates has done it, and it's now growing in, and he's happy.
It's not frowned upon.
His girlfriend is happy. He's happy.
That's it.
Confidence. It's like I said to him the last time I saw him, I'm like, this is the old you that's back. Because I think it can be, look, some guys don't give a shit. I mean, like, some guys don't care. I've got one mate who's been pretty much bald from his early 20s, late 20s maybe.
That's a rough one.
Yeah. And but he owns it.
Yeah.
And he's totally okay with it. And it would be weird if he suddenly had hair.
Yeah, well, now.
Now. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sure.
If you start balding, you're lucky.
I mean,
he's
taking strain.
He's aging badly, but it looks like a stress aging. Hey, look, but honestly, look how much hair would improve that.
I know.
Do you know what I mean? Just cover his forehead.
Yeah,
hair and a beard, and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Exactly.
He should do the JD Vance.
There we go. Yeah, that would work. You're right.
He'd be because if he ends up, I mean, Prince Charles has been struggling since he was William's age. You know what I mean? Prince Charles is never a looker.
No, he's never looked.
He's
good.
Never been, And I don't get that because, again, it's like you're wasting being a prince or queen. So Prince Charles's father before, he wasn't King George.
He had a lack of time. Prince Philip. Yeah, he had an awesome
time. No, Prince Philip wasn't his dad. Wasn't Prince Philip married to his mom?
Prince Philip was his dad and the queen was his mom.
Was Prince Philip his dad?
No.
Oh, I thought Prince Philip was a stepdad.
No.
Oh, well, look at that. Oh, no wonder, because Prince Philip was... Hey.
He had fun.
Yeah, but I think the queen chose him for his bravery and his, you know, thank you for your service.
No, he was a good-looking oak when he was younger.
So who fucks up the gene pool?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
This is my thing. Because if Philip was a dashing...
You've got to remember, with all of those royals, there's a lot of... interbreeding between the families. So sometimes you get, I mean, if you look at the Danish queen, she's not in great shape. I think she's actually abdicated to her son. She started looking really bad. There's a lot of them that are not great lookers.
Yeah.
I mean, just because you're royal doesn't mean you look like anything, right?
Yes.
So you've got to be very careful with that stuff.
Did you get the video?
So people are talking about whether or not you have like a hot looking daughter and whether that's good. Carl says, I lost my hair after I found my uncle hanging himself. Now I just shave my head. Got to own it instead of trying to hang on. That's quite a hardcore story.
Wow,
Carl. Jesus.
Listen, don't worry. I also shave my hair by choice. Fortunately, I'm not balding.
But
it doesn't run in my family.
You got a good shape head.
Yeah.
I have a terrible shape head. I reckon I would look very fucking weird if I went bald. be a very bad look.
Would you do the hair transplant thing if you noticed that, okay, yeah, it's thinning slightly?
I think I would, hey. I think I would. One time. I'm just so grateful I don't have that problem, but I think I would.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't allow it. For me, I would hold on to my hair.
Where do they take it from? Can.
They take it, they harvest it from where you've got good hair. I think the back here. And then they do the implants here in the front. You know, like when you go to Turkey, you see.
How long are you like man down for? You don't want to appear in public.
I think you man down for at least a month, I would say.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly.
Work from home, eh?
It looks very bad immediately after they do it. You know, like it looks sore and red and it looks. But honestly, if you look at it over time, because I've also got a mate who started balding. And I mean, this guy is like the all round hunk jock.
Okay.
And he started balding relatively early, like 32, 33. And he was like, no, I have to do something. Then he went and he tried all the other things that don't work. Eventually he said, Turkey, straight, came back. Now, 4 or 5 years later, he's couldn't be happier.
Loving it.
Yeah, because it would have, you know, like it would have ruined his confidence. Sure. Like there's so many other things that your hair gives you, you know?
For sure. No, I have no problem with it. I think if you want to do it, it gives you the confidence. It's like women who have plastic surgery. It's got nothing to do with me. It's their decision. If they want to have their boobs done,
I'm of course, happy with it. That's not about anyone else at all.
Ever. No, but I mean, if a girl wants to and it makes her feel better, I will support it. But if a girl doesn't want to, I'm not going to force it.
Mm. Will you pay for it?
You know what I mean? Well, if I'm in a relationship and it's not just like a fun sort of flirtatious thing. It's like a couple of weeks.
Otherwise, you're going to pay for boobs for somebody else.
It's expensive, right? Yeah, I'm not paying for some other guy to enjoy the spoils of war. Come on, what the hell? But if you're married and your wife or you've been in a long-term relationship with a girl and she says, look, I want to have this done.
No problem.
No problem. Yeah. But then, you know, if a guy wants to go for a hair transplant, lekker. What I don't like is when people start doing the butt implant, the calf implants, the
calf implants.
Yeah, they go for the stuff, dude. That people are doing all kinds of weird because you put that stuff itching. In. Ab implants. Can you imagine? Like the guys who spray paint the abs on.
When you see those ab itching abs close up, you know what I mean?
That's bullshit.
It's bullshit. Please just get the six pack. You know why I'm asking is because on the doctor's show.
Yeah.
When I was on the doctor's show.
They wanted to give away a boob job.
Yes. Oh. I said to them, gents, let's push to 100,000 subscribers and give away a BBL.
Yes. You know what I mean? Brazilian butt lift.
Yes. What I've learned is I've got some experience with BBLs myself.
Sure,
not that
of
I've
course.
Had one, but I've listened to testimonials on BBLs. You've very close to my heart. Okay.
Some would say you might even be one of those people who collects testimonials about BBL.
I'm a bit of a BBL whisperer myself and PH, actually. And I was like, you know what you're talking about, like the confidence that it brings. And like if somebody wants to do it, I think we knock it a lot. Like I look at like on Twitter when people are like, oh, the BBLs, the BBL. But I think about it like this. For the women that get the BBLs done, they really want it because they know what it's going to do for them. And for the men who pay for the BBLs, they really want it because they know what it's going to do for them. Everybody wins.
Basically, you're saying it is philanthropy.
It's philanthropy. And I was like, you know what? Let's change somebody's life and give them a BBL.
I think
it's about 100K.
You're a philanthropist.
100K, 100,000 subscribers. Mm. There we go. Carrotcliffe just got a check. We inside.
Okay. So what do you think about these people who go for plastic surgery too young? I'm talking about facial plastic surgery because I don't know these people personally, but they're people on social media.
Mm.
And you can see they've had a fair amount of work done.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's very flattering. It doesn't look good.
Like you can see when it's overdone.
Like guys and girls in their 30s who already have these cheekbones up here.
Mm. Filler.
You can see they've had like stuff done around the eyes. You know, maybe like chin or jaw if it's a guy. If it's a girl, like they'll have wrinkles taken out here. I think that there's you reap some pretty horrible rewards later in life if you do that too early.
The thing is, I think where it becomes a problem is when it becomes, it's because it's like an addiction. You know what I mean? Like what
Michael Jackson.
You go and you get the first few injections.
Yeah.
You like how it looks. You love that sort of that look of flawlessness.
Yeah.
And you invariably start doing more because you need to maintain it. You know, you can't go for one course of injections and keep it for 10 years. It doesn't work like that. And now when the wrinkles come back and the filler starts dissolving, you're like, oh my God, I need to get more this time. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you're overcompensating.
Yeah.
I think there is a happy balance one. Like, and I don't blame girls, but you know, you want to look perfect all the time. Even men, depending on what line of work you're in, you might be a real estate agent. So you want to go and you want to get flipping the wrinkles taken out. So, you know, like, you don't want to look tired. I go for Botox.
Real estate agents.
I've been 31 for 6 years. You know what I mean? It's time for me.
Where did they put the Botox with you?
Well, I haven't been for a while, but forehead.
On the forehead? Yeah. Okay.
I've got very defined smile lines.
Uh-huh.
So I'll do here. But when I say minimal, I insist on it being minimal because when it goes away, I don't want there to be a stark difference.
People go, Jesus.
Yes. People mustn't look at me and be like, you definitely went for Botox. And I think a lot of the young people in their 20s, even walking around, you take one look at them and you're like, this person's been for Botox. And the problem is when it's Botox, the filler, the lip filler, the hair extensions, you start doing too much and then you look like a tart.
You're just fake.
Super fake. Yeah. And that for me is where if I know it's fake, you know, like what we were saying about like ugly kids, you scamming me because I'm going to have a child with you and the child's not going to come out with Botox filler and flipping lip filler. Now the child's going to come out ugly because you never looked like that all along. This is a scam, little Prince Charles.
Hey, where's the picture of that Ozempic model? Speaking of fake. So here's a chick. I sent this to James this morning of this girl at a fashion show in Sao Paulo.
Yeah.
And this is the model, and she's wearing a shirt that says, I love Ozempic. And look at the size of her.
Okay. A fashion model.
Yeah, fashion model.
Yeah, this is a DEI That's fashion great. Model.
So, okay, now for some fun Ozempic. And for a break in our usual programming, this is a brilliant thing that I saw. Oh, there would be me bald. Jesus Christ.
Is that?
Did you guys just make that now? Well done. Good Lord.
Let's see.
I look like a banker.
Yes. Like, no, dude, you look like...
Yes, that's cuck. How long did it take you to do that? Jesus, that's
bad. You look like a retired school shooter.
Yeah. And look, it almost looks like I'm actually there now. If I just dip my head under, how's it, guys? All right, very good. Take it away. This is a game that someone put on Instagram of like, who will be the most hurt? If this oak rolls this boulder down a hill. Have you seen this thing? Let me just put it up and I'll explain it. So you can see here. Okay. No, don't give it away. Oh, for God's sake. The still picture first. Jesus, you spoil all the fun. All right. Who's going to get the most hurt in this picture? It says A is the one standing on the far left there.
Okay.
B is the oak in the ditch.
E is the oak rolling
C is the oak under the spikes.
Okay. I see him.
And then D is the oak in the little hole, but his head sticking out. E is the oak who rolls the boulder down. Who do you think gets the most hurt?
Well, C is getting... B's getting a stake put through
C's
his heart.
C's definitely sore.
C's dead.
Yeah, C's very sore.
D is dead because his head is exposed.
Yeah.
Unless he's lucky for that thing to sort of scoot over him.
Okay.
C's fucked. Yes. I mean, there's just no way around it for C. B is going to get squashed.
Okay.
And I don't think the other rock will hit A.
It might, because remember, it's going to come down and...
It can't, because the rock that is on the other side of the seesaw is lighter than the rock that's rolling onto the seesaw.
You think? Okay, it may be made of different stuff.
The one looks like the Apple logo.
All right, so here's what actually happens. There's lots of guesses here happening. Komotso says E, Sanela says E, Bitcoin Boot says B, Leanne says B.
Okay, E can't get out. He's rolling the rock.
Watch.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so here we go. Now you can play the video. Here it is. Okay, rolls down.
That oak's dead. Doof, dead. Doof, dead.
All dead. And
there we go.
The spikes go and they kill that oak as well. So they're all dead.
That's a lie.
You don't believe it?
What would have happened is the rock would have it would have killed B, cool. It would have hit the seesaw and A would have been completely fine because it's far enough away. Scam.
I think that's pretty good. Now, what's that video you wanted us to see that James has finally
James,
noted?
Where's the video of the hot chicks, boo?
Oh, yeah, please. Come on.
Come on, James.
Okay,
I sent you a video on DM.
In the meantime, when you while you're loading that one, show the video with the lady with the Mentos and the Coke.
Where did she put it?
I've seen this done a couple of times on a couple of different videos, and I'm not quite sure this is real, and I just want to see what's up.
What the hell? What the hell? Yo, granny, why? How's those intercuts there?
I love it. Just show it getting totally destroyed.
Look, I've never tested it, but thank you for showing us that it is real.
Did you ever make a chlorine bomb?
Boo.
So many.
I did at school.
So many.
But let me tell you. This is like an admission of guilt.
Go on.
But anyway, we made one. I think we underestimated the power that this thing had. You know?
Yeah.
So we made it. No, I'll be implicating myself. But anyway, some people I knew made one.
Was there property destruction?
Bad. People's whole patio is fucked. It hit the patio furniture, sliding door. We threw everything. It over the wall.
Oh, Jesus. Thinking,
we thought it's going to sort of like hit the side of the pool and make a big splash. Don't make chlorine bombs. I know it's like a thing you do in high school because you think, but like if you go a bit overboard, it can be very dangerous. We made one and it didn't go as planned.
I definitely made a couple.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, you look with no hair on your head. You look like someone make a nuclear bomb. So you have it in you.
I want to see this video of that family. Have you found it? Okay. Very
load
good.
It up.
All right. That's
I promise you this, like people. You said earlier. This is the dad you don't want to be.
As lighties, we destroyed many, many post boxes, says Slippery Pickle. Middle America doesn't deserve the internet. That lady, hey, listen, at least that woman will be forever immortalized in that clip. Otherwise, you'd never have known she existed.
Who, the lady with the Mentos?
The lady with the Mentos and the Coke.
Look, she could have pointed it away from herself. I mean,
she's an idiot. I mean, she almost went in for it.
Yeah. You know? She's going to put her mouth over it.
Like, and that does work, by the way. It does work, which makes me think, like, when people eat Mentos and then they drink a Coke, what's going on
what's
inside?
What's going on in your stomach? That's a
good
point.
I mean, can you imagine the shit that's happening there?
I'd love to know what causes the reaction.
So I think it's, I don't want to guess here, but I think that what the Mentos do is that they activate a decarbonize, they make the Coke lose its carbon dioxide.
I see.
Very, very quickly.
So if you could leave the Mentos in the Coke, whatever's left in that Coke bottle would be flat Coke.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because even if you put like half a teaspoon of sugar in half a glass of Coke,
it takes
all the acid out. Not violently like that.
No. But I think that's what's happening. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure. Okay, Bitcoin Boot says, Warris and PH spoke about the promotion on their show. The one with... Which promotion?
Yes.
James got a promotion.
Oh, yes. No, yeah. Maybe James's promotion, or you might be talking about the BBL. On it.
But they both go together, actually, because what James has got as part of his promotion is that he's going to get a BBL. That's what's happening.
And Botox and filler.
Very, very good. Okay, so have you got the video now? Okay, let's watch this. I want to see these people.
Emily
Fitzgerald. Set is Pepper Mayo.
She's Adidas.
Dress is Hutch from Anthropology. Shoes are Curry
Birch.
TJ Maxx. TJ Maxx.
You always say TJ Maxx.
TJ Maxx or Walmart.
The top is from Tiger Mist.
Tiger Mist.
It's from Cider and the shoes are from Fashion Nova. Don't look at
cute.
My shoes. Dress is Pepper Mayo and shoes are Revolve.
Necklace. Hold on.
And the necklace is Every Jewels. Happy birthday, Mom.
Of them, actually.
Oh, my God.
Hey? So the comments there, James, on that video, because people were like, what the hell? Like, whose family is this? They didn't miss. Because you get those families where the mom is hot, the dad is hot. They've got five children.
Yeah.
Three of them are gorgeous. And then, like, one is struggling.
Two,
one's fat.
Two that are real monsters. You know, back in the old days,
two of the Christian, the paternity.
Back in the old days, you would have locked the two ugly ones in the basement. They would have worked. You would have made them peel potatoes and stomp on the grapes to make wine.
Three would have worked in the house, and two would have worked in the yard.
two of them would have been like hard labor, man, in the dark. They would have never seen the sun.
No new clothes for you to get the hand-me-downs of the
Where's your ugly stepsister? No, she's down in the basement. She's busy. Why doesn't she ever play with the rest of us?
No. Leave it alone.
No. And your brother with the one eye? No.
He likes being alone. He stays in the bell
tower.
Why
do they call him the beast? Oh no, don't worry about it.
But you know, as a parent, okay, and this, like I say this, unfortunately, all my children are gorgeous. But listen, if one of them had put a foot wrong and was pup, I wouldn't visit you. I'm joking.
Well, you know, when I'm in a really, really like manic mood, I often think that it would be a good idea to have kids with like about three or four or five different women.
Yeah.
And then what you do is that you make them all compete. Because you'll have them around about the same time, so almost the same age, right?
You have them
all the
same
different
year.
Women. Yeah, same year. And then you have them compete for your love.
Yeah.
And they do physical tests and mental tests, and it's about their looks and about all of these things. Jeez. And you only keep the one that's the winner, and you send the other four to the orphanage. Don't you think that would be good?
No, I don't. That is a terrible idea. Yes,
you don't think that would be good?
No, carrots. Please, take some advice from me. When you start, have them from the same woman. That halves your problems. Okay, that's number one. Number two, don't make them compete. Okay, just love them all equally. You're not allowed to have favorites. Yes.
So you don't like my idea?
No, your idea is terrible.
It's a shit idea.
Brood, listen, and I'm talking from experience. I've run this race. You know what I mean? I've got two mothers. Three boys, two whites, one colored. It's a mess.
It's a mess. I bumped into this couple.
I got to pull up at family functions
on Saturday at this marble circus thing. There's this couple, and I walked past. I was going to go and find some friend of mine. This oak goes, "Hey, Gareth." So I go, "How's it?" He goes, "Yeah, I heard you said something about the colored." So I thought, no, fuck, what have I said?
Yeah.
So he's like, "No, I'm only kidding. Meet my wife." So she goes, "What's your problem with the colors?" Like, so I said, "I don't have a problem with the colors." She's like, "Okay, let's have a picture." Yeah. I thought, fuck, thank God. Yeah. I thought suddenly, like, have I said something about the colors lately? You know, you go through your head, you're like, because I say a lot of things on the show. I thought, now I've got to be careful now.
You know, and funny enough, I talk shit about the coloreds all the time. I talk shit about everyone equally, to be quite honest. But what I notice is that I remember when that big thing happened where I said, I'm not colored. That thing got like 11 million views.
Yeah.
And not all of them positive. It was like 50-50, you know, but it got the conversation going.
Yeah.
Because now I see last week the koi and the san won something to be classified as Africans.
Okay.
And I
so
was
they
like,
black
yeah,
now.
There was like not what's it called? You know, when Parliament sits to have a discussion.
Oh, God. Yeah.
What they were discussing is whether or not to make koi and san African. No, Africans.
Mm.
And my understanding of African is native to Africa.
And those are, they have the best.
They were here first.
Yeah.
So I was like, why was this even a chat? You know, in any case, when I said
is
I'm
for
not BEE
colored, points.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I know they camped outside the union building.
Yeah, they're still there. Some of those oaks are still there.
Yeah, but those oaks are there because they smoke so much Zool. They don't even know that they've won.
That's also true.
In any case, when I went to a Gayton rally after that.
Oh.
I went to the PA rally at Orlando Stadium. And it is full of colored people. Half of Aldo's was there. So I walk into the section there. And I'm now like with the members. You know, I was with the people.
Yeah.
And honestly, if 100 people came up to me, 60 of them came and said, Waras, now you say you're not the colored. They saw that clip.
Oh, really?
Oh, they had a question around that content. Not one of them
was
angry.
So it was important for them.
It was important for them.
But they weren't cross.
They weren't cross. Nobody came to me and said, fuck you, we heard what you said, we hate you, you canceled from being colored. They came to me and they were like, either if they were negative, they said, why did you say that? Then I kind of I qualified what I was saying.
Why are you gay?
You understand? And I said, no, that's not what I was saying. What I was saying is X,
Why
Y, Z.
Why did you say that?
Yeah. And I was like, then they were like, okay, cool, let's have a photo. So you'll notice when you see people face to face, regardless of what's happened online, they are completely different.
Yeah, no, no, I've never had anyone come up to me and say,
I saw what you said absolutely. On Twitter and I want to
never had anyone come up and say anything to me about anything that I've said and say, I have a problem with
you.
Most people are very friendly, and I think that's a South African thing across the board.
Now, and look, I haven't tested it as far as the Israel-Palestine chat, but I did have something to say about that, so I'll be avoiding Fordsburg at least until January.
All right, so let's talk to TJ Stradom. I've had him on the show before, and he is a business author and a journalist. He's written a number of books. In fact, I think the last time I spoke to him, we spoke about Christo Visser. Wasn't that the one we last spoke about?
It was Beckham.
Gus Becker, that's right. You've written about all these oaks.
Nice to meet you.
So TJ has written now about Capitec. Yeah. It's a hell of a story, hey? This Capitec bank story is actually incredible. And they have grown, and they continue to grow in leaps and bounds. In fact, all the other four banks are very nervous about them. And they've managed to find a market that we thought no bank would be able to get to. They've shut the lights out. They've done extremely well. They continue to do extremely well. But your book, Stalking Giants, you tell the story of this group of people who started the business and how micro-lending, you know, the Mashonisas.
Yeah.
Basically.
They formalized Mashonisas.
Yeah. And how that worked before and how that kind of helped them understand that market too. Yeah. So welcome. Nice to see you.
Thanks, Gareth. Nice to have to be back, man.
Don't say anything about the coloureds or ugly children or I mean, you'll be
BBLs.
Fine.
No, okay. Right.
Yeah, and full disclosure, I have a Capitec account.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, brilliant.
Okay. Yeah, me too.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Okay, so tell us quickly, what first of all made you want to write about this? Because it is, you know, did Capitec say to you, write the story about us?
No. I mean, I think they would have been happy if it wasn't written at all. I mean, those guys are so under the radar. Yeah.
Who are these oaks?
You know, so it's founders, Michiel Leroux, Rian Stassen, Gerry Fourie, who's now the CEO, was there from early on. But then, you know,
a bunch of Dutchmen.
Lots of Afrikaans names.
So who are these? Where did they do before?
Half of them came from the liquor industry. Between them, they launched stuff like J.C. Leroux, Savannah.
Wow, clever guys.
Hunters, Olofberg Brandy.
Right.
So, I mean, they are Amarula. It's serious product guys. So that's why I think, so they shifted from liquor to Boland Bank in the 90s.
Boland.
And then after Boland.
Wie moet dan bedank?
Boland.
Boland Bank.
Exactly.
Do you remember that?
The ad.
I caught that in the book.
I was going to ask you, when you said, who are these guys? I was going to say, were any of them from Boland, Volkskas, Trust Bank? Remember back in the day, we used to have a lot of...
I forgot about Trust Bank.
Yeah, but remember, APSA is an amalgamation.
That's right.
Yes,
exactly. Volkskas.
That's right.
Those banks, but anyway,
that's a very good history lesson.
About Boland Bank.
Yeah, Boland Bank. But Boland Bank got sucked into, in the end, got sucked into Nedbank. What was left of Boland. And that's why the guys left around that, well, earlier than that, when they were sort of merging with BOE. They didn't like that kind of merger. So they left, all came, you know, like seven executives, rocked up at Michiel Leroux's door when he was sort of trying to build a bank with these micro lenders for PSG, because PSG supplied the capital. They got this incredible management team with lots of experience in banking, and Michiel had run that at Boland. For a few years. So, you know, what you need if you want to build a bank is obviously capital. You need good people. And then you need a distribution network.
Right.
And the distribution network was those three. They bought 300 micro lenders. I mean, every town in South Africa, they had a little micro lender cash loan shop. I think I tell this story in the book. One of the shops was an old butchery. It still had that butcher's block in there. And then you come and get a cash loan there.
And did they start with cash loans, or was it always in a structured account? So, in other words, when they bought these micro lenders, did they then, every micro lender's premises was now rebuilt into a Capitec bank?
It took some time for them to convert, but initially the going concern was that business of micro lending. Yeah. So, they say sort of end of the 90s, mid to end 90s, PSG starts buying micro lending shops, cash loan shops. Classically, that thing, give someone your card and your PIN. You borrow money, 30% per month interest rate. You know, they're going to draw the money when it when it pops into your account.
Like proper Mashonisas.
Like old school.
Let's just talk about Mashonisas for a second, because I know a little bit about this too. These guys charge unbelievable interest rates. But if people need, you know, a couple of $100, they've got to pay for an operation or their kids' school fees, or they need to buy clothes for their kid to go to school or stationery or whatever, you need to borrow that money immediately. People will go, they'll borrow like R1,000 or a couple of R100, and then these guys will charge you like 50-60% interest in some cases.
Yeah.
And these are bad people. Like if you don't pay them, you're in big shit. Yeah, they break your kneecaps, and then they keep adding to the capital amount too.
That's the compound interest kills you.
Yeah. So almost anything is better than a Mashonisa.
Yes.
So if you can get it better from a financial institution, and a lot of these people don't have credit records or any of that stuff. So this is a very clever move by Capitec, because they obviously saw people need access to loans. They don't want to be ripped off completely. We can charge them anything is better than what the Mashonisas charge. So they went for the gap.
Yeah.
How hard is it to get a banking license in South Africa?
Well, in the early 2000s, it was tough. I mean, it's still tough now. Yeah. And I think for almost two decades, they didn't grant any banking licenses. It's only when Time and Zero Bank and...
Recently, that
was like 2017, Discovery Bank. So it was for almost decade and a half. Capitec got theirs because PSG bought two, you know, defunct banks. There were lots of banks, small banks, and PSG bought two, and they used it as a shell, changed the name to Capitec Bank. And that was around 2001. So they bought the bank 2001. Capitec had already started, you know, things had other names, Data, Dot Matrix. I mean, they had these weird sort of classic late 90s kind of names, their businesses. But they started converting these shops into a bank. So Michiel's idea was, you can build a very basic bank with this distribution network, because in every town there's a thing. And when he started first doing research for PSG, they pulled him in, said, listen, come and have a look at how can we make this business work. I think they had about 70 of these cash loan shops at the time. When he came in, he said, well, you know, the only way to do it is to do it at scale. You buy more and then get a banking license, and you start providing these basic banking services. And one of the things, he played it down when I asked him about it, but in one of their sort of internal publications of Capitec, they started by saying he goes to these micro cash loan shops and he looks at the complaints books. And there's complaints about lots of different things. The only thing people don't complain about.
From the client.
Yes, okay. Exactly. But remember, it's very old school. So this is, it looks like a pharmacy or something. It's like an old.
Like an apteek.
Yeah, precies. And so he says, you get complaints about almost everything, except that the interest rate is too high. The biggest complaint is, I can't borrow enough money. And he thought that was something.
That's
that was
incredible.
Something interesting. And it tells you a little bit about where South Africa was after the transition, and people still didn't have access to finance. I mean, most of South Africa couldn't walk into a bank and expect decent service because they got treated like second-class citizens just because you wear an overall. And that's the problem, because banks were these, you know, bulletproof glass and fucking outanis with bolas.
Yeah.
There's no way for you to then come in and think, oh, I'm gonna suddenly function in the new South Africa as a guy with a bank account and fully into the system, because
that's why so many people in this country don't believe in banks. They don't trust in them.
Exactly.
They would rather put their money under the mattress.
And it's still a thing, man.
That's true. Our helper, she has a Capitec account actually, but as soon as the money's paid in, she goes and she withdraws all of it.
No, because she doesn't want it to sit.
But that's the thing. I mean, so it's become less now, but back then, everyone lived a cash life basically in South Africa, unless you were in this, you know, upper middle income.
Yeah. I think in the class bracket that you found yourself, because interesting, like what you're saying is, you know, with the dissolution of the trust banks and the Boerlands and the banks that used to exist, they amalgamated into these bigger monsters.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So you had the RMB group, you had First Rand, you had Nedbank,
Standard,
there was no way for the guy that's actually at that end of the, let's call it LSM 1 to 4, he also wants a bank account and he wants those micro lending shops, somebody was going there.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, his problem is he actually has a bank account. If he's got a job, you know, if he works at the till at Pick and Pay or whatever, he already has a bank account because
they don't.
So, he doesn't use any of the functions back then. Didn't use any of the functions. Goes and withdraws everything on the first day the money comes in. Then walks around manually going to pay his municipal account and going to pay. So it takes half a day of someone who works on shift. You know, so the sacrifice to use financial services was massive. And that's what Michiel thought. He thought, you put something in between. You make it electronic. South Africa's had an advanced banking system. And since the 90s, it's been one of the best ones in the world. But only a small part of the population benefited from it.
So, I mean, this was obviously a gap then that these guys saw, and that's very clever. And, I always give credit where it's due because everybody will go, oh, well, you know, if you run a bank, you're a parasite, you're living off other people's money and all this kind of thing. But it takes enormous balls to be able to pull this off.
Mm.
And it takes a massive amount of foresight, and ideas need to be implemented and executed. And they've done so well because now, obviously, the big story is that Capitec has grown in leaps and bounds. Mm. Give us an idea of how that looked from a growth point of view, because most people hadn't heard about Capitec, and then suddenly it was huge.
Mm. Yeah, so started in 2001.
Yeah.
And now they're on, so let's say started with zero clients.
Yeah.
Banking clients. Now they're on 23 million. 12 million of them on the app. So banking, there's a bit of double counting because, I mean, if you have a Capitec account, yeah, you probably have another one well. Too. Mm. But
23 million is not a bad number.
I mean, that's one in every two adults. Country. That is
massive.
That's crazy. I mean, it's almost like, I mean, think of how many votes at its peak did the ANC get, not 23 million.
No.
So, I mean, it's a bigger organization than, you know, the biggest political force in the country's history. So it's a massive deal.
I paid for something the other day. And I don't have a Capitec account, but the machine went doot, like that Capitec sound. That's their machine.
That's them. So they've done really well to get that point of sale market, the merchant market going.
Right.
So yeah. So I told you the end, but they had sort of not a slow start, but a gradual start.
Mm-hmm.
For the first 6 years, they didn't even do ads. They just pushed through. They had like a million clients before they did their first.
Like they did all the groundwork, the grassroots work, was taking over the Mashonisa shops, the money lenders and whatever around the country. You know, Mark Barnes,
post office
Mark Barnes. His plan with Post Bank or using the post office network, was exactly the same in that you've got a post office in every town. If you make it a bank, you get access to the very market that Capitec. No one was doing it up until that point. This is my thing, is that you had these 23 million people that nobody was bothering to serve.
And the old big four banks, they were happy where they were. They were
complacent.
Milking the banking costs, just, you know, scalping you on home loans. That was their business, scalping on vehicle finance. I say scalping. Let me not get sued here. But, I use it metaphorically. Yeah. But that was their business. And Capitec just slowly, and I mean, we don't think about it now, but in the early 2000s, banking costs was fucking horrendous.
Yeah, they were ripping us off. For sure.
So Capitec just positioned themselves, and I don't know if you guys remember them, Zanzi accounts. The Zanzi accounts were these, it was the big banks, it was their plan to sort of pull in they call it the mass market, but it's basically just everyone who's unbanked. It was their plan to do that. And they came out with these Mzanzi accounts, and they spent hundreds of millions a year advertising these accounts. So it's branded Mzanzi, but then it's also Standard Bank or also Absa.
Standard Bank Mzanzi account.
That was exactly it. Mm. So they came out with these accounts, cheap, awesome. The Capitec account was cheaper than that. So they did all this marketing spend, and the attention all went to Capitec. So before Capitec even started advertising, they got a hell of a lot of attention from the Mzanzi accounts. So to slowly go through, maybe around 2007, they're on about a million clients, but this banking cost fight is playing itself out. People are gutful for paying for stuff they don't need.
Exactly.
If a check bounces, you pay $200. They hate that. Yeah. Then there was this investigation into banking costs by the Competition Commission. Okay, there was a report that came out. It had parts that were redacted or that were censored. Then WikiLeaks published the whole thing, and you could see how the banks were really milking it.
Mm.
And this whole narrative, Capitec came in as this challenger brand, and they had this narrative that we're cheap, but it's, you know, it's good value. I mean, you don't have to pay for banking.
No, that's certainly the positioning. And I think a lot of people in the market, even if they got that, you know, from some other source, they got the information that Capitec are not ripping people off.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it really, that worked in their favor. And it did no favor to the other banks.
No.
Because people were like, okay, those are the profiteers. Here's where the real business is.
They were also smart in that Capitec has one account.
Yeah,
If you're an FNB, I'm an FNB client as well. I was a gold client, then I become platinum. It's got this class differentiation.
Capitec's all the same.
Whether you've got $1 million in the account or 10 rand.
Well, I realized it was a thing when I saw people lining up at the end of the month at Capitec ATMs or at branches. Mm, and they still had branches because a lot of people want to know where they have to go.
Mm.
Their money has to be housed in a place.
Yes.
And they want the face-to-face contact.
Yeah, they don't believe in this stuff with apps and electronics. Maybe that's changing, but it's taken a long while because people are like, no, I want the cash money. I want to feel it in my hand.
And I want to talk to a person.
You could see the Capitec branches are busy at the end of the month.
Yeah.
The ATM queue at the Capitec, I mean, even the one in Sandton City.
So they're obviously
going all the way around Checkers.
That's right.
They're obviously trying hard to get people to do more on the app and to draw more money through the retailers or whatever. Because they started with this stuff in 2005, I think, already with the retailers and partnering with them. So when you want to draw money, you pay one rand at the till. If you go to the ATM, you pay 10 rand because then, you know, you help the retailer. If all the cash they sit on, the end of the day, an armed response vehicle or like an armored vehicle comes and collects it. And so people carry it out in small amounts. So they were very innovative. And I think that's maybe the thing that people, they think it was a very basic business, but the things they thought of, for example, no cash in the branches. I mean, that's, you'd think, okay, it's a bank, so there's going to be cash. They said, if you want cash from us, you can have a consult us here, but the cash will be dispensed from the ATM just outside.
I see. That's true, actually. Yeah.
So no one's going to rob you. There's no bank robbery.
Right.
It's
no bank robbery risk. I think, you know, like we're discussing it now and we're like, wow, that's brilliant. But I think what jumps out for me is that the whole idea was actually so simple.
That's
nothing. There's no reinvention of the wheel here. It's just simply applying a solution to a problem that was there that the four big banks hadn't thought of.
Well, starting over, and I think that's the thing. If you design something from the get-go, you know, you design something from zero, then you can do it very differently. The old banks, you can go, look, there's a paper-based idea to most of what they do. Even nothing today, I think they've come a long way. But,
tell me quickly, are Capitec a listed business now?
Yeah, they are. They're worth 350 billion rand.
Wow.
Jeez. Standard Bank is just, they're about the size of Standard Bank in terms of market cap.
That's incredible. How embarrassing for Standard Bank. Hey?
Yeah.
After 20 years in the game.
And meanwhile, Standard's been, that's the oldest bank in the country.
That's it.
And it has, it's bigger than Absa and Nedbank put together, Capitec at the moment.
Jesus.
It's chasing Standard Bank.
So who's
first
the
rand.
Biggest? FNB?
RMB? Yeah, First Rand. But remember, there's a lot of things in there. So the RMB is in First Rand and FNB is in there. And I think Vestbank is in there. Yeah. So it's like a lot of different businesses. And the same with Standard Bank, you know, they've got some foreign operations.
But you're telling me that Capitec's the third biggest bank.
In market cap, in client numbers, the biggest.
Wow.
And then the weird thing with Capitec is, almost everything they do is South Africa. They've got a small fintech that they own in Poland, but they are 99, more decimals a South African business.
That's amazing.
So it shows you that you can actually, if you understand your market in South Africa, you can make it big in a very short space. And I mean, that's 20 years.
I love what Warris said just now. It's like you have to see the gap in the market and be willing to find efficiencies. Who would have said back in 2000 and whatever that this would have, that the banks weren't already saturated
exactly
in terms of the available existing market, and that those people who were not in that market yet maybe never wanted to bank.
Yeah.
Mm.
And these guys thought, no, let's go and do this. It's amazing. It's very, very clever. And you said they want to fly under the radar. So was it a problem getting interviews with them?
Yeah, so
they don't really want to talk about themselves.
They were happy to talk about Capitec. Okay. And that's the thing. So if you read the book, it's, you know, it's not an expose on people. It's more how they did it.
And they were that all to me is the, to talk to you about the bank.
Exactly. I mean, people write other books, Stellenbosch Mafia, whatever. If you want to, read what cars these guys drive, go and read, those books.
Yeah.
If you want to understand how a business is built,
that's
the thing that, you know, my elevator pitch is always, I write stories about South African successes.
And I love that, because that is actually what's more important.
Way more important.
Because honestly speaking, I don't blame them for wanting to be under the radar.
Of course.
Because if they have to be very public about what they've done, the first thing that's going to happen is they're going to be accused of basically white people building a bank for black people.
Absolutely.
With an idea that honestly anybody could have come up with.
Correct.
It's kind of like, you know, look, we thought of it first. Nobody was servicing this market at a time when everybody was pursuing tenders and how can I get paid?
Correct.
You understand? But you could have built a business like this. Nothing was stopping anyone from doing it.
So I mean, spoiler alert, but I sort of end off the book with this research that I found from UJ. And they said, they looked at the effect Capitec had, because, I mean, they obviously started a price war with the big banks in banking costs.
Which and benefited with, everybody.
Absolutely. And with micro lenders in providing credit. So, you know, they didn't stay at 30% per month.
Yeah.
They pushed it down and down. I mean, they were going for a year and they halved that interest rate, which just flushed out lots of the other micro lenders. If their business wasn't going smoothly, you know, the other machinishas and cash loan shops, they were in serious trouble. So they've always been price aggressive, but it had this effect. And the research said 20 billion rand a year is the benefit for the South African consumer from Capitec being around.
Wow.
And nobody's kneecaps are getting broken. No, that's
the same. Yeah, exactly. You just get a little prod on your app. Luister, meneer, kom betaal. But if you look at that, 20 billion a year, that's more than any one of the founders made, any one of the...
Yeah.
I mean, 20 billion that's a amazing. Year, it's a mushy effect, and now you can see it.
It's a classic case of them making the whole cake bigger instead of cutting the cake into smaller and smaller slices. And we've now got an extra 20 billion rand in the economy that we wouldn't have had if Capitec hadn't come along.
Yeah.
They've also exposed a lot, because, you know, interestingly, what you mentioned earlier in terms of them bringing the costs down is that I think FNB, at least in my experience, was the first to have a pay and clear service.
Yes.
So what would happen is, if I want to pay Gareth into Standard Bank, I pay him, it charges me 50 rand, even if I'm sending you 200 rand.
Right.
Okay, so I pay 50 bucks to clear that payment immediately. And then Capitec charges 8 rand.
Exactly.
So
I think it's 650 now. They get crazy. Yeah.
So now when you think about that, it's like, how much money are you fuckers making off me if you're charging? You're thinking, you know, like as somebody who doesn't know about banking, you're thinking, look, it's such a convenience, I don't mind paying the 50 bucks, because perhaps I'm sending you 100K.
Sure.
50 Rand and 100K is nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
But 6 Rand 50 is 6 Rand 50. That means there's an extra 40 Rand that's in there.
Imagine you earn 3,000 a month.
And you've got to make
Every banking costs you, you know, 2 liters of milk and a loaf of bread.
And it's the same with the withdrawals. You can use any ATM with your Capitec card and they don't charge you. These are just convenient things where it's like, I wouldn't purposefully go to a Standard Bank machine with my Capitec card. It's because Capitec doesn't have as many ATMs.
They've got a shitload actually now. It's interesting. Yes. But initially, that's why they use these retailers. Initially, they just didn't, rolling out ATMs on the scale that Absa and Standard Bank had at the time, it's obviously a costly thing. And Capitec had this problem back then. You know, the malls didn't like them. They thought, these are micro lenders. You know, we don't want you to open a branch here. You know, micro lenders have these queues at a certain time of the month.
On the month, we don't want that.
Well, interestingly, the queues are still there in a form, but that's it, yeah.
Well, it's a sign of success. All right, so TJ, thank you very much. You can find him online at TJ Stradom and check out his latest book, which is called Capitec Stalking Giants. You can get the whole story. And as he says, this is about growing a South African business, not like some soap opera story about the
Stellenbosch Mafia.
Just one thing, sorry, Gareth, man. my handle on Instagram is at Wortel.
Oh.
TJ Stidham was taken by someone else, but I'm TJ Stidham on LinkedIn. Okay. Yeah,
so TJ Stidham was taken by TJ Stidham.
There's another TJ Stidham. I mean, this guy. I should make him an offer.
Yeah, you should actually.
You should, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think it's a more. Fascinating story, and I like the way that you're writing about all these people who've done things in South Africa, so we can understand how it happens. Because people think, unless they read these books of yours, they think it's just magic. Like someone builds a bank,
yeah,
or privilege, or whatever. Yes, one of those.
It's now white monopoly capital, which is just such honestly, bullshit. it's like an excuse for everything that's losing credibility.
And if we built 20 Capitec in the last 20 years, where would we be now? We'd be fine. Well, I mean, just think of that. Think of the effect for the consumer if you have those savings coming through. But South Africa is overregulated in many ways. And if you read the book, it's a story about deregulation. There was just one little thing Minister of Finance or Minister of Trade and Industry did in 1993, and it just opened up this big thing. And suddenly someone could move nimbly.
93, who was our Minister of Finance
Derek
then?
Derek Keyes.
Do you remember him?
So he just deregulated. There was like a thing. They said, listen, we can see that no one is granting loans to that part of the market. If you lend out 6,000 or less for 36 months or shorter, no maximum interest rate. You choose the interest rate. And then every man and his dog went into that thing and started cash loan shops. But because they were nimble and they could think differently, not as regulated as the banks, suddenly it opened up this thing where they really started talking to clients. And I think that, I mean, innovation comes from being free to do what you want. And we need more of that.
We do need more of that. Yeah. Okay, keep writing these very good books. It's always lucky to
I've got a lucky one coming up next year.
Tell us, give us a little clue. Come on.
Have you ever wondered about Charles Glass?
Yeah, the castle.
Yeah.
Castle Lager.
What do you know about him? What do you guys know about Charles Glass?
Who is Charles Glass?
Yeah. Charles Glass, who's brewing class one fame around the nation. They had a song about him and everything.
Charles Glass is an actual guy? He existed. I've got a lot about him
nonsense
now.
Nonsense thing like... They made him up as
Ronald McDonald or whatever.
Yeah, Ronald McDonald.
No.
His signature's on all the castle.
Yeah. So, I'm pretty deep into the research now. I'm going to use that as a window to tell SAB's whole story. But Charles Glass itself, I mean, he himself is pretty interesting. Wow. Early days of Joburg, brewed.
That'll be fantastic.
In this dusty, shitty town, he brewed amazing beer for the time.
And what a story SAB is.
That's a story.
It's incredible, right? Yeah. World famous, massive industry.
So, and now for this year, every castle, I think, is tax deductible. So, I mean, I'm giving it back. I'm sticking it to the man for at least a year.
Tell me, have you heard of, I know it's off, but in terms of like South Africans who built something that nobody was thinking of, have you heard of Eben Barlow?
No, who's that? Those are Monster Energy guys. Who's Eben Barlow?
Eben Barlow was the executive outcomes guy.
Oh, yes. The mercenaries.
The mercenary.
Yeah.
The private military contractor.
Yes.
Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Eben Barlow.
Yes, I remember.
I watched a very old documentary about him. But I'm fascinated by how they built the business. I mean, people like Eric Prince and Blackwater essentially stole his idea.
Yeah.
You know, this was a South African concept.
Yeah, it shows you how innovative we are.
That's it.
When it comes to dirty things.
Well, but again, it's like, it was right there.
And what about...
It was an easy idea. He was like, well, where are these soldiers going to go? What's going to happen with all these weapons? I'll take it.
Right.
Somebody else will need these services. And well...
There we are,
You know,
There's some amazing stories. Didn't they just arrest that Diamond Oak who's been...
Oh, Liebenberg.
Liebenberg.
Mm. Oh, Louis.
Yeah. That's an interesting story too.
It is.
Sure.
Well, they've arrested him. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
That's Zuma's friend.
Yeah, no more invites to Nkandla.
No more invite. Well, I don't know. We need to reach out. Oaks are busy, bro. They're in Parliament now. You can't touch them. They don't take my calls.
Well, listen, TJ, thank you. Warris, thank you. We didn't talk any American politics in the last hour. We talked all the other cuck. So yes, it was lots of fun.
But we touched on American politics.
In the first
The election is in the next 7 days.
Yeah. It's going to be big. Yes. And that'll have an influence and impact on us too.
Yeah.
So don't think that you're safe from whatever happens.
If you want
Trump.
Your fuel prices to come down, if you want your electricity and energy prices to come down, Trump needs to win. Because I think the first thing that he's going to do is he's going to go hard on the fossil fuels And then we can stop all this nonsense that we're entertaining at the moment.
This bullshit about, have you seen how the Eastern Cape has been ruined by wind farms? It's disgraceful.
Shit show. Disgraceful. And over and above that, we've got all this coal under the ground, which we need to burn. Not because we hate
drill,
the environment.
Drill, baby, drill.
That's it, brother. Let's go.
All right. That's enough from us for today. We'll see you on Wednesday at 6 a.m. Don't miss the Shady Podcast, which is on every week right here on The Real Network. And there's so much other good stuff still to come. On the bounce, we've got a new show coming up with Speedster soon. We've got a show with Pearl Tusi coming soon.
The doctors.
Lots of good stuff. The doctors Let's are already man. On. Let's talk, man. So make sure you don't miss any of that. Go to therealnetwork.com to find out more. Cheers.